we have to be very, very careful. What we're talking is not so much democracy, we're talking organised hypocrisy. Hard facts.
I'm sure that many of you, if not all, have heard of the Balfour Declaration. Now, growing up as an Israeli, you would think that the Balfour Declaration is one of the Ten Commandments. That it came down the mountain with Moses, and that Balfour was some kind of a prophet or a saint. Every city, almost every city in Israel, has a Balfour Street or a Balfour Plaza. And growing up, you'd think that Balfour was, you know, at least a prophet, maybe a king, a Jewish king.
In the centenary year of the 1917 Balfour Declaration, a tawdry colonial document which involved the British government of the day granting the land of the Palestinians to the Jews of Europe and beyond, there is no gainsaying the fact that until the crime of Balfour is acknowledged and redressed, there will never be peace in the Middle East. Not only have the Palestinians been subjected to all the crimes of colonialism and settler colonialism, they have been denied their rightful status as victim of a crime. Instead, depicted as unreconstructed terrorists, savages and barbarians intent on inflicting on their Jewish neighbours another Shoah or Holocaust. It is an inversion of the truth that has benefited from the support of the so-called international community. In truth, the US and its various client states, whose complicity in Palestinian suffering constitutes a moral outrage that stands as an indictment of the very term Western civilization. And the latest in an unending cycle of injustice endured by a people whose only crime is that they dare to exist on land coveted by another people is a furor unleashed over the decision of UNESCO to recognise Hebron's old city as a Palestinian world heritage site. Hebron, for those of you who are unaware, is where a particularly vicious and aggressive campaign of dehumanization, intimidation and brutality is ongoing against its Palestinian residents by Israeli Jewish settlers. According to a Palestine Monitor report, due to its religious significance, Hebron became a stronghold for the religious extremists within the Jewish settler movement. Today, the city has four Israeli settlements in its centre with approximately 800 residents. It has also been surrounded on all sides by four much larger Israeli settlements. And the report goes on. The Israeli settler community in central Hebron is notorious for its frequent assaults on Palestinian civilians. Protected by over 4,000 Israeli soldiers, these attacks are considered part of an intentional effort to displace the local Palestinian population and expand the illegal Israeli settlements in the centre of Hebron. End quote. This story is replicated throughout the occupied territories of the West Bank, where, as I speak, Palestinian land is being slowly, systematically and willfully expropriated, i.e. stolen, by an Israeli government that has no intention, zero, of ever allowing anything approximating to a Palestinian state ever being established alongside the State of Israel. Indeed, given the programme of ethnic cleansing, the system of apartheid and ongoing theft of Palestinian land and resources, it is arguable that such a state is now well nigh impossible. What we have instead is one state, Israel, which with the active support, connivance and or acquiescence of the aforementioned international community, has reduced the lives of millions of non-Israelis and non-Jews to a state of abject poverty, immiseration and despair, punctuated with regular bouts of mass murder under the rubric of security and anti-terrorism. In this respect, there exists a strong parallel between the racist brutality being visited on the Palestinian people today and that visited on the indigenous peoples of North America in the 18th and 19th century. And here's the thing about injustice. Not only does it destroy its victims, it also destroys the humanity of its perpetrators. And as such, Israel will never be free until the Palestinians are free. And let no one be in any doubt that justice for the Palestinian people is the cause of humanity in our time. I'm John White, and this is Hard Facts. Well, Miko Peled is an Israeli-American activist and author whose book, The General's Son, Journey of an Israeli in Palestine, has been described as masterful and a must-read. And he joins me now on the line from London. Miko, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, in response to this decision by UNESCO to recognise the old city of Hebron as a Palestinian World Heritage Site, Washington's ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, described it as an affront to history, while Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu described it as yet another delusional decision by UNESCO. First of all, your response to their response to the decision by UNESCO.
Well, I think the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. needs a history lesson if she thinks this is an affront to history. And Netanyahu's response is perfectly predictable, because the entire Zionist operation, the entire state of Israel, is built on an affront to history, claiming the Jews have a right to settle Palestine. And you mentioned the Balfour Declaration, and it's in the declaration itself where, towards the end, it says that the Jewish homeland should not prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities. In other words, the only recognition for the Palestinians is as being non-Jews. You know, and that was, I think, that was kind of the prelude to the fact that there is no recognition, or the total lack of recognition, of Palestinian rights to Palestine. It's been 100 years. Palestinians, like you said, have been dispossessed. They've been the victims of genocide. They're victims of an apartheid, brutal apartheid regime. And they completely flipped the history. The Israeli, the Zionist regime and the State of Israel, but the entire Zionist movement, really, which is much larger than the State of Israel, have completely changed the history. They created this myth that somehow all Jews around the world are a nation, and because we're somehow the descendants of the ancient Hebrews who lived there 3,000 years ago, we have a right to live there now and so-called to return. But Palestinians have no rights to their land and certainly don't have a right to return, even though they were only kicked out, less than 100 years ago. So this is the narrative, and this is, of course, an absolutely absurd, mythical narrative, but the West has adopted it, and sadly the UK has kind of led the way with this, with the Balfour Declaration. So there's nothing surprising about it, but it is tragic, and it's a good thing that UNESCO finally decided to do something like this, but it would be a bit like saying that Glasgow is a Scottish World Heritage. It's obvious. It's no big deal.
Certainly, and certainly it's obvious to you, Miko. You're obviously intimately familiar with this struggle, this issue. You're an Israeli, as I mentioned, Israeli citizen, and you grew up with all the privileges accorded to that status in that context. And yet you renounced those privileges in the interests of justice. Give me a quick summation of what that involved and what was the catalyst for you to renounce that. What was your Damascene moment when you decided that you could no longer take part in this architecture of oppression that the Palestinians have endured for far too long?
Yeah, the subtitle of my book, like you said, is Journey of an Israeli in Palestine. And that journey is exactly the journey of the privileged from the privileged sphere into the sphere of the other. And that was an epic moment, realizing that the other, even though they live very close, because, you know, Palestine is a very small place, and so the journey is geographically very short. But it's a huge journey, because we are told that the Palestinians are dangerous, and they're terrorists, and they want to kill us, and they're irrational, and so forth, and dirty, and everything else that people always say, the privileged always say about the others. And so I took that journey and realized that there was an injustice here of such incredible proportions that I cannot, stand on the sidelines and accept it. Sadly, people come to realizations like this usually as a result of a tragedy. In my case, it was the death of my sister's daughter, who was killed in a suicide attack in Jerusalem. But having made that, taken that step and met Palestinians and have seen what the other side is like, you know, the negligence, the deprived reality in which they live, deprived of water, deprived of the right to travel, living under if they're Israeli citizens, they live under the shadow of the Israeli secret police. If they live in the West Bank, then they live under the boot of the Israeli military and so forth. And of course, they don't share the rights and the privileges that I do as an Israeli Jew. So that was a very powerful moment, and I'm still, the journey is still going on.
Now, I mean, I mentioned the role of the so-called international community, and this is not recent. Indeed, Israel would not have been able to be established and survive and thrive without the support and ongoing support of the international community. Indeed, you would say complicity in a crime. And to get to the heart of what underlay and underlines this support. There's a remarkable quote by Britain's famed and revered wartime Prime Minister Winston Churchill, who gave testimony at the 1937 Peel Commission into what was then unrest between Jewish settlers and Palestinian indigenous people there, the Arab Revolt, which began in 1936. And Churchill said, with remarkable honesty, "I do not agree that the dog in the manger has the final right to the manger, even though he may have lain there for a very long time. I do not admit, for instance, that a great wrong has been done to the Red Indians of America or the black people of Australia. I do not admit that a wrong has been done to these people by the fact that a stronger race, a higher grade race, a more worldly wise race has come in and taken their place," end quote. Now, Miko, I cannot avoid suggesting that if those words had been spoken by Adolf Hitler, nobody would have been surprised. Those words are a monument to white supremacy and racism, are they not?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think that anybody has any... Anybody who knows anything about Churchill can have any doubt that he was a racist. I don't think there was any doubt, you know, like I said, if anybody knows anything about him or read the things that he said and written. But of course, there could be no colonialism without racism. The whole idea that you can come and colonize another country, another nation, cannot exist if you believe in human rights and civil rights and the equality of all mankind. Colonialism always comes with racism and with violence, which is why the state of Israel is a racist, brutal, violent entity. There cannot be a settler colonialism without the violence. And what you described earlier, the reality in the city of Hebron, particularly the old city of Hebron, it is textbook racist settler colonialism, with the brutality, with the horrible violence, with the racism, with the discrimination, of course, that goes on there. And of course, it's not limited to Hebron. Hebron is an extreme example, but it goes on in Jerusalem. It goes on all over the country. It goes on in the Galilee. It goes anywhere where Palestinians still reside. There are these signs of the brutality of racism and settler colonialism. That is the state of Israel. And it's interesting because in some people's minds, there still is, you know, this idea that the state of Israel used to be good, used to be kind, used to be socialist, used to be peace-loving, and now it's turned somehow and become right-wing. And I always remind people the state of Israel was established after a year-long campaign of massacres and ethnic cleansing. And then immediately when the state of Israel was established, an apartheid regime was put in place that put the local indigenous population as the disenfranchised and people like myself, my parents and grandparents, as the privileged. So I don't think the state of Israel has gone to the right. I think the state of Israel has always been an abomination. The whole Zionist project is an abomination. And therefore, you know, the Brits would do well to retract the Balfour Declaration and start acting to bring about justice and repent for what they've done.
We'll stop right there for a short break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this. Hard Facts. Welcome back to the second half of Hard Facts. I'm sitting down with Miko Peled, Israeli-American activist and author. We're discussing the latest developments in occupied Palestine, in this, the centenary year of the 1917 Balfour Declaration. We just had UNESCO's recognition of the old city of Hebron as a Palestinian World Heritage Site and resulting furor on the part of the Israeli government and its supporters around the world. Miko, you were speaking very passionately about what you describe as the abomination of Zionism. Now, Zionism grew up as emerged as a response to European anti-Semitism, and I stress the word European. The Holocaust, which is one of the greatest crimes in world history, perhaps the greatest crime, with 10 million people were slaughtered systematically. 6 million of those were Jews, for no other reason other than they were Jews, in service to this rancid, rotten, perverse, fascist, anti-human ideology. And the horrible irony, the tragic irony of history, is that a people who suffered so much are now visiting suffering on another people, almost venting revenge on that people. But what do you say to those, Miko, speaking in as an Israeli and as an Israeli Jew, or certainly of Jewish cultural background, who say that you can never overstate the psychological impact of the Holocaust on the Jewish psyche, even today? What do you say to people who make that argument?
Well, first of all, I remind them that the vast majority of Holocaust survivors, the very people who survived the Holocaust, chose not to go to settled Palestine, chose not to go to Israel. the Holocaust has been used cynically by the Zionists, by the State of Israel, in order to justify their own crimes. But the very people who were the survivors, you know, less than 10% of Holocaust survivors after World War II actually went to Palestine and settled there. And many of those who did go actually left because they were treated very poorly by the Zionists. And so there really is no connection, legitimate connection, between the people who live in Israel today, people like myself, and the Holocaust, because very few of us are connected to the Holocaust. But there is this indoctrination that goes on, a very powerful indoctrination that constantly reminds Israelis that since the days of the Egyptians and the Greeks and the Romans and the Inquisition and the Nazis and now the Arabs, there's a long line of villains who are trying to kill us. And therefore, we must be strong and we must never compromise and we and so on and so forth. And therefore, the narrative is so important. And also, at the same time, we are the descendants of King David, although there's no historical proof that there ever was a King David, but we are the descendants of the King David, and we treat the Old Testament as though it's a history book, even though it's a book of faith. And so everything is jumbled up in a way to justify exactly what the Zionists want to justify. And how can you argue with that? I mean, if you accept the narrative, then how can you argue with these poor Jews that they have a right to exist and have a right to have their own state and their own military and defend themselves and so forth? But this is all propaganda. I mean, the reality is that the very people who suffered the Holocaust said no to the colonizing of Palestine, did not go.
Yes. Many of them tried to get to the United States, but they were rejected, I believe. 3 million, I think, were rejected.
That's true.
And they were diverted to Palestine. Yeah. Now, interestingly, I mean, taken on its own term, this Zionist project that you describe has been remarkably successful, has it not, in not only colonizing Palestine, but in also rewriting history.
Yeah.
The entire history of the conflict, of the region, of their own history, and their connection to that part of the world. Now, it seems to me that more and more people are reaching an awareness of the reality of the situation there. We have the BDS campaign, the international campaign of boycott, divestment and sanctions. And here's the thing, you know, Israelis or supporters of the status quo in Israel suggest that what we are advocating, those of us who support BDS, is the destruction of Israel and the destruction of the Jews. That's a complete travesty of the truth, isn't it? Because you didn't have to be advocating the destruction of South Africa and white South Africans to be against apartheid South Africa.
Yeah.
Give me your view on the current state of BDS and how effective it has been and where it needs to go from here.
Well, you know, the BDS has been remarkably successful. It's a dedicated, principled, justified, and I think it's probably one of the most effective forms of resistance we've seen. You know, generally speaking, there's a big change. I'm here in London now this weekend, this past weekend. There was the Palestine Expo here at the Queen Elizabeth Center right in Westminster with over 10,000 people in attendance. It was the largest ever Palestine event in the world. Things are definitely changing. The claims against the BDS, the call for BDS, are ridiculous, especially if you take the time to read the demands of the BDS movement. The demands of the BDS movement are completely reasonable. You know, the ending of the military occupation, which the international community has already accepted, needs to happen. The equal rights for Palestinians with Israelis, which is a very, you know, obviously a very basic and again, a reasonable demand. And the return of the Palestinian refugees to their homes and their land, which again has been enshrined in international law, and there's a UN resolution that calls for that already. So there's nothing unreasonable. There's nothing that talks about the Jews. Nothing talks about destruction. All three demands are remedial. All three demands have to do with fixing the problems that the Zionists and the State of Israel have created for the Palestinians. They deal with the three main groups of Palestinians as Israel divided them, the people who live in the West Bank, the ones who are citizens of Israel, and the ones who are refugees. And again, there's nothing anti-Semitic, there's nothing racist, there's nothing violent, it's completely reasonable. And again, it does not talk or deal at all with the Jews who live in Palestine. There's nothing there about harming them or killing them, of course, or anything like that. But anything that justifies, anything that legitimizes the Palestinian cause has to be designated as terrorism. That's how Israel operates. That's how the Zionist PR machine operates. There cannot be anything. They've gone after Palestinian charities. Even charity to Palestinians has now been conflated with terrorism. So charities to Palestine are all closing down and people are being arrested and accused of supporting terrorism and so forth. But this is how they perform. This is how they act. It's outrageous. It's unjustifiable. And I think the fact that the BDS movement has caused such panic inside of Israel is a very good thing. And I think that this is just the beginning. I think the BDS movement, the full potential of this call, of this movement, has not yet been materialized. And once more and more people realize how important it is to participate in this, then I think we will see, you know, the day of free, democratic, and just Palestine will be upon us.
Now, in my introduction, Miko, I mentioned the fact, my opinion, that the prospect of a two-state solution has been rendered impossible by the actions of the Israeli government and its various agencies over the years with regards to expropriation of Palestinian land and resources and the bifurcation of Palestinian land between Gaza and the occupied territories and even the bifurcation of the occupied territories, which is an ongoing process. Now, you've been particularly vocal on this particular question, and you, I believe, are a champion of one state. Could you just quickly lay out what you mean by one state? What would that look like going forward?
Well, one state already exists. Israel established a single state over all of Palestine with exclusive rights for Jewish people. This is the racist apartheid regime that we know that exists there today.
Yeah.
And taking of the West Bank was, you know, part of the original plan. They didn't do it in 48. They did it 20 years later for reasons that had to do with internal Israeli politics. But there was no question that the West Bank was going to be taken, the Gaza Strip, that the entire country belongs to the Jews, and that they were going to, you know, settle all of it with Jews and get rid of the Palestinians one way or the other. You know, so we have to realize that to begin with. I mean, there never was any intent to compromise on the land, because that's part of the ideology. The land belongs to the Jews. Now, as soon as Israel took the West Bank, it kicked out hundreds of thousands of Palestinians and settled the land with Jews. I mean, this happened immediately. And they saw it as a completely normal thing to do, which is exactly what they did since 1948 in other parts of Palestine. So all of Palestine is occupied, and all of Israel is occupied Palestine. And all Israeli settlements are illegal settlements. And that is the one state that we have today. I believe that there needs to be a change. I believe that this one state needs to become a democratic state with equal rights, and that respect the right of return and makes the right of return a reality so the Palestinian refugees can return to their homes and their land. And I believe this can be done. As we've seen, you know, South Africa is probably a good example. Although it's not identical, but, you know, there was an apartheid regime that fell, and it was also a settler colonialist project, and it fell, and in its place came something different. And I believe that is upon us, and I believe that is what we all need to fight for. This idea that there could be a state of Israel that will compromise and make peace with the Palestinians is science fiction. It's absurd. Everything we've seen over the last 100 years shows us clearly that that is an impossibility. What we can do is we can create a reality where Israelis and Palestinians live as equals in a state in which they are all equal citizens and have the same rights and the same vote and the same voice and so forth. And I believe that is what we need to fight for. And I think the BDS is the right way to do it. There are other forms of resistance, of course, but I think it needs to be a bigger part of the conversation. We need to stop talking about the two-state thing as though it is somehow a possibility, as though it's somehow something that might happen. It will never happen. We have a choice of a democracy or an apartheid regime, and that's it.
Okay, can I just ask you what the state of the movement for justice for the Palestinians is in Israel itself? I understand that you're very much in a minority with your views and stance. How many of people are like you, of like mind, are there in Israel, and what prospects are there for a Palestinian solidarity movement within Israel itself at the current time?
Yeah, there are. The Israelis who think and talk like I do is a very small number of people. They're marginalized. Israelis don't want to have this conversation at all. And if you look at the makeup of the Israeli parliament, the Israeli Knesset, you can see how Israelis think, because Israelis vote in very high numbers. And the makeup of the Israeli Knesset is on this issue is, you know, there's a complete consensus on the issue of Palestine. I think the Israeli society will change, and once it's brought down to its knees and it's forced to give up its privilege, and then the Israelis will wake up one morning and they will have a Palestinian prime minister, and their children will go to school with Palestinian children, and they may well have a Palestinian headmaster, and the sky won't fall, and everybody will go back to work, and everything will be fine. That is when Israeli society will begin to change. I don't think there's a reason to expect that there will be some kind of a solidarity movement within Israel. Israeli society is a democratic, liberal democratic society. Israelis can go to take to the streets and demand that 2 million people in Gaza will have access to clean water. They don't. In this horrifying heat this summer, there is no access to clean water and there's no access to electricity. And Israelis are sitting comfortably in their homes and saying and doing nothing, even though they can. It's a liberal democracy. They can protest. They can stake to the streets. They can make demands. Nobody says anything. Nobody cares. that is the reality, and I think that will never change until they're brought to their knees and forced to live in a reality where they no longer have privilege, but they live as equal citizens with everybody else.
You've been listening to Mikko Pellad. I'm John White. Until next time, remember, the only facts worth taking seriously are hard facts.